Good evening. It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, March 8th. I'm Dennis Hart. Welcome to another in our series of live programs in this time slot that will explore and analyze what's going on at Iowa's state capitol, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it all means for all of us. As always, I'm joined by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, good evening. A pleasure to be with you again on this Monday night.
Oh, nice to see you, Dennis. Always glad to be here.
And we're glad to have you here, and I'm glad to be here as well. Well, we have a lot to talk about. More than 375 bills cleared the state legislature's first major hurdle last week, which is called the funnel, and others failed to get beyond that funnel. We're going to talk about that, but first, let's begin with what we learned just a couple of hours ago, that Governor Kim Reynolds has signed into law one of the bills that had already passed both houses of the legislature. It is one that you and I, Laura, have spent a lot of time talking about for the past few weeks because it's going to bring big changes to voting laws in Iowa and affect so many people. So let's start with the voting bill. For starters, voters are going to have less time to request an absentee ballot. Talk about that, please.
Yes, less time. So under the current law, voters could start requesting absentee ballots 120 days before an election. So that's in about early July for a general election. That's going to move to a 70-day limit. So late August will be the first time people will be able to request a ballot for the next general election.
There's also going to be no mass mailing of absentee ballot request forms.
But correct. County auditors are not allowed to mail absentee ballot requests to everyone in their jurisdictions. If somebody calls their office or contacts the office directly, they can mail a request form to that person, but they can't do a mass mailing. And the Secretary of State also can't do a mass mailing to all registered voters in Iowa unless directed to do so by the legislature in the context of a public health emergency. Mm-hmm. So let's hope that this pandemic is over and we never have that again. But but the downside is that then we'll never have it so easy for Iowans to receive those absentee ballot request forms.
Now, there's also going to be less time for auditors to mail those ballots. Why is that important?
Yes, well, they shortened the time for voting by mail in three ways. They took 9 days off the front end. So the first day that auditors can mail ballots to voters is now going to be 20 days before the election instead of 29 days before the election. Then they took 5 days off the middle. So it has been the case that up until 10 days before the election, the auditors can mail a ballot to you. But now the cutoff is going to be 15 days before an election. So really, in effect, auditors are only going to have 5 days, starting from 20 days before the election and ending on 15 days before the election. That's the last time they can mail a ballot. Then they also cut 6 days off the back end. So under current law, the previous law, I guess if you mailed your ballot on time, on or before the day before the election, it could be counted if it arrived by the Monday after the election. So you had basically 6 days after the election for the ballot to arrive at the county auditor if you mailed it on time before the election. Now there's a firm deadline. Ballots have to be in the auditor's office by 8 p.m. on election day, or you're out of luck. So if you mailed your ballot a week before the election and it takes 10 days to get there, your vote's not going to be counted.
And that may be one of the most critical aspects of this whole thing, because many voters, as you know, get their ballots in the mail the day before in a lot of states, and they are counted in a lot of states, even if they arrive 3-4 days afterward. In California, it's 10 or 12 days afterward, but not in Iowa anymore.
Not in Iowa anymore. I mean, state law differs. There are quite a few states that have laws requiring the ballots to arrive by election day, but in most of those states, they begin mailing the ballots to voters 30 to 45 days before the election. So people have quite a bit more time. I mean, one thing that's going to be a problem for a lot of voters is if they mail you your ballot and it takes a few days to arrive and you make a mistake filling it out, currently you can call your county auditor and they can send you a new packet. At this point, you know, it's unlikely that there would be time. By the time you get your ballot and fill it out, it may be already less than 15 days before the election, and you won't be able to get a replacement ballot. And that for somebody like me who lives in town, that might not be an issue. I could go over to the office. But for snowbirds who spend the winter in other states, or for people who with a disability or people elderly who don't drive, that's going to be a real problem for them being able to vote.
The bill also makes it more difficult to hand deliver completed ballots.
Yes, right now you can give your ballot to anybody to hand deliver to the county auditor. And under the law, the new law, only the voter, somebody living in the voter's household, an immediate family member, or a caretaker is authorized to deliver a ballot. And that is something that I think is going to be challenged in court, because many advocates for, especially for people with disabilities, said that this is going to be just a big problem, that there are lots of people now have a friend, a neighbor, the person who delivers Meals on Wheels, someone they know from church, any trusted friend like that deliver their ballot. All of that is going to be illegal under the new law. And so if you live alone and you can't drive or can't get to them and you don't want to trust the mail because you're worried about it not arriving on time, it's going to be pretty hard for you to get your ballot in.
And there's also going to be less time to vote early in person.
Correct. They also took 9 days off the early in-person voting. So instead of starting 29 days before the election, the in-person voting that happens at the county auditor's office or in some counties, larger counties, also happens at satellite voting locations, that is only going to be able to start 20 days before the election. And that'll be an issue. The satellite voting also is limited in how county auditors can set that up. And I expect longer lines for people voting early in person. I mean, I'm going to be encouraging people to vote early in person rather than using the mail. But the flip side is that you may have to wait in line for an hour or more to get your ballot in person.
And if you wait until election day to vote in person, you're going to have one less hour to vote.
That's right, because the poll closing time for state and federal elections is now moved to 8 p.m., which is what in the past it's been for school board and city elections. But for many, many years, Iowa polls have been open until 9 p.m. for state and federal elections. And that's a problem for some shift workers, getting out to vote. It's not the busiest time, of course, that hour between 8 and 9 p.m., but there are quite a few people who vote. And when this came up in the legislative debate, you know, the Republicans said, I trust Iowans to change their plans and be able to make this work. And, people can have the best intentions, but sometimes things come up and there's traffic and you just might not get there on time. So I do think that that's going to probably trip up some voters as well.
For those listeners who have just joined us and wondering why we're talking about this bill for the third week in a row, the reason is that Governor Reynolds, just a couple of hours ago, signed the election voting bill into law, and that means changes for millions, well, hundreds of thousands of voters across Iowa. And we know, Laura, and we've talked about this before, that Iowa is among really a national wave of Republican-led states whose leaders have expressed doubts, about the integrity of the election that saw Joe Biden defeat Donald Trump for the presidency. There is, we should say, no evidence of widespread voter fraud, either in Iowa or across the nation. Democrats say this new law is going to suppress the vote count. Republicans say it's going to improve the integrity of the election. But there wasn't a lot of doubt about the integrity of the election, was there?
Right. And I mean, it's not very credible, honestly, because there was no even allegation of fraudulent early voting, whether by mail or in person in Iowa. I mean, there just weren't any problems with the early voting here. So it's really hard to imagine that any of these restrictions would be happening if Republicans tended to use early voting more than Democrats. I think what we saw is that in Iowa, even though Trump carried the state, a lot of people have been asking me, why would they restrict voting? Trump won the state by 8 points. Well, actually, the early voters did prefer Joe Biden. And in most of the races, the early voters did skew toward the Democratic candidate. So I think they're still, Republicans still see a competitive advantage if they can make it more difficult for people to vote early. And so, I mean, I think that's what's driving this. It's not just in Iowa, of course, as you mentioned, it's in 30 some states where bills have been introduced. And Iowa is just one of the first to be fully enacted. But these discussions are ongoing. And one of the common threads is people making it, Republican legislatures trying to make it more difficult to vote early.
Yeah, and that is exactly correct. The New York Times and the LA Times, as you know, among the newspapers, Washington Post, that have reported that I think it's up to 43 states that where Republican-led legislatures are trying to limit voting as a result, apparently, and we say apparently, of Donald Trump's continued claim that the election was stolen, though there has been no factual evidence presented of that.
Right. And I mean, I've been talking to contacts around the state. I mean, one issue is this bill is targeting Democrats, but there will be a lot of Republicans who are caught up in it, and not just of the people who have trouble voting by mail. And that's a lot of rural elderly snowbirds. But also, one of the provisions that we didn't talk about yet is that it makes it easier to move voters to inactive status. So currently, you would have to miss two general elections in a row. If you don't vote at all for 4 years, you would be moved to inactive status. That's the first step toward taking someone off the voter rolls. And if you're inactive and then you show up to vote, you have to bring additional proof of identification and residence in order to vote. And so what's going to happen is the hundreds of thousands of Iowans who vote in presidential years, but not typically in midterms, those people are going to not vote in the 2022 midterm. And when they show up to vote in 2024, as usual, they're going to find that they're not on the active registered voter list. And if they haven't brought with them some kind of proof of address that they live in the precinct, they might be turned away. And that's going to be a problem, not just for Democrats, but think about all the low propensity voters who Donald Trump activated, people who don't normally vote. And a lot of those people are going to be unpleasantly surprised when they show up in 2024 and have trouble casting a ballot.
Could you summarize again? You have heard that there could be lawsuits on this. What would be the ground?
Yes, well, I think there are three separate categories of lawsuits. First is the groups, the Democratic aligned groups and groups representing racial minorities or people with disabilities. That Mark Elias, who's the leading Democratic election lawyer in the country, he already tweeted today, watch this space. We're going to be litigating against GOP voter suppression bills all over the country. So I expect that before long, probably within a matter of weeks, there will be a lawsuit filed challenging some of these restrictions on early voting and hand delivering ballots and so on. I mean, I think it's going to be difficult for them to win those cases because courts might find that, you know, people still have the option to vote on election day. So maybe these limits on early voting aren't so bad. But that's one whole avenue of challenge. The Libertarian Party has also confirmed to me that they plan to challenge another part of the bill, which dramatically increases the number of signatures that third-party candidates need to collect in order to run for federal offices. And that's designed, there's a Libertarian who's run for Congress several times in the 3rd District, and two elections in a row now, the Libertarian has received more votes than the difference between Cindy Axne and David Young. So Republicans really want to make it hard for Libertarians to qualify for the ballot. So there's going to be a question over whether they've made that too burdensome for independent or third-party candidates. And then the other area is this bill it creates a possibility to have more criminal penalties against county auditors. And this one, I'm not sure that I think there could be a challenge, but I think that the only people who would have standing to challenge it would be the county auditors themselves, or maybe people who work in county auditor offices. But one of the Democratic legislators who's a law professor at the University of Iowa, Christina Bahanan, she raised a concern during the Iowa House debate that she thinks that these provisions on county auditors' technical infractions are too vague, and they might be unconstitutionally vague. They basically make the Secretary of State the judge and jury, and he can impose a fine on county auditors for technical infractions which aren't defined in the law. So that could be seen as arbitrary and vague. So, but I'm not sure whether any county auditor is actually going to bring a lawsuit in that area. But the Libertarians will definitely sue, and the Democratic aligned groups will definitely sue. And it's probably going to take, you know, many months or maybe even the better part of this year for those to get resolved.
And you and I will be following it and reporting on it right here on Capitol Week. Let's go on to some other things now. Bills that survived the funnel, which was last Friday. First, briefly, please explain the funnel.
Okay, the funnel is a way for the legislature to manage their work. It's a rule. It's not in Iowa law, but it's a rule that the legislature has operated under for a long time. And it says that by the end of the 8th week of the legislative session, which in this case was last Friday, any bill that is not related to taxes and not related to appropriations or spending that hasn't been approved by at least one committee in the Iowa House or the Iowa Senate is done for the year. So they have to at least get past that hurdle. And the vast majority of bills that are introduced don't make it through that committee process. I mean, many of them don't even get assigned to a subcommittee. Some of them get through a subcommittee, but don't get taken up by the committee. So it's really, I mean, even though hundreds of bills do get through the funnel, it's really quite a lot that die in the funnel. There's a second funnel later that usually happens in late March or early April, where at that point, bills have to be approved by one chamber and through a committee of the other chamber. So that's going to cut it back even more. But this first funnel is where a lot of ideas die for the year. And we saw that again last week.
As we said off the top, about 375 bills are still live after the funnel. No, we are not going to talk about 375 bills tonight. We have 15 minutes left. Let's talk about some of the major ones, including abortion. Talk about that.
Well, the constitutional amendment that would say that there is no right to an abortion in the state of Iowa, that's still alive. I'm actually surprised that the Senate hasn't approved that yet. The House approved it right away. And I thought that the Senate would move on it quickly like they did on the pro-gun constitutional amendment, but it's still sitting there. So that's one area that is still going. Most of the social conservative wish list legislation, though, did not survive the funnel.
Including the LGBTQ bills.
Yes, there was a record this year, 15 bills introduced by Republicans that were, generally speaking, targeting the LGBTQ community, and all 15 of them didn't get through the funnel. 11 of them in the House never even got to a subcommittee. In the Senate, there were, out of the four bills that were introduced in the Senate, three of them got past a subcommittee, but they didn't get through that committee. And it's, I find it a little bit disheartening that these bills continue to be introduced every year. And I think it would be helpful probably for the legislative leadership or the governor to say that we're not interested in this kind of bill, because it does harm marginalized groups in Iowa to have these legislative discussions every year and to have to mobilize and fight these bills. And honestly, the main reason I think that these bills didn't advance is because of the business community lobbying against it. If you look at the lobbyist declarations, which I always say this every week, always look at the lobbyist declarations. You see on these bills, Principal Financial Group, Wellmark, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, the Iowa Chamber Alliance, the various different chambers of commerce in some of the large areas, Greater Des Moines Partnership. These groups are very against these bills because they've seen what happened in Indiana and North Carolina and other states where they passed laws targeting LGBTQ community. And then they lost events, conventions or sporting events, you know, people canceled tourism plans. And it's just it's a headache that people don't need. And actually, Rick Sanders, who's in works in an ISU development role, I mean, he said that the Iowa State University Research Park has actually lost out on some investments that they were in the running for. They were competing against Purdue and one other university. And based on the atmosphere of what's going on at the legislature, he told the Des Moines Business Record last week that they're no longer in the running for those. And so it's discouraging for the business community as well.
It is 18 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock on this Monday night. You're listening to KHOI's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart. The lady right alongside me, although she's a couple of thousand miles away, is Laura Bellin. And it's good to see you again tonight, Laura. We can see each other through Zoom. We should tell people that's how we see each other. Let's veer for just a moment. In a related story to all of this, you reported on your Bleeding Heartland blog site this week about Iowa getting a C-minus grade for reproductive health and rights. Explain that, please.
Yes. Well, this is a group called the Population Institute, and they evaluate access to sex education and contraception and other forms of family planning, reproductive health care. So STI testing, all kinds of different reproductive health care, as well as abortion. And they graded all the states. I was actually surprised that even after the last 4 years under a Republican trifecta here, Iowa is still slightly above the national average. That we got a C minus grade for access to reproductive care. The C was based on, they evaluate states based on 13 different metrics. And then we got the minus because of a 2019 law that targeted Planned Parenthood and said Planned Parenthood is no longer eligible for sex education grants, the federal sex education grants. So, but actually 23 states got an F, and four states got a D or a D minus. So Iowa, you know, clinging to a C minus, where it was interesting to look at their scorecard and see that there are still areas where Iowa is still doing a little bit better than other states. But there are states, you know, Minnesota and Illinois, which neighbor us, are got Bs on the same scorecard. And a few states around the country, mostly on the coast, got A grades.
Okay, let's get back to those bills that are still alive after the funnel, which means that they're still to be debated and voted on, either the Senate or the House or both. Let's talk about education. A number of education bills are still alive.
Yes, they Well, the education funding, this main school funding bill is already signed into law. The governor signed that. It's a little bit less than 2.5% funding increase. But one of the big sticking point issues still to be decided is whether they're going to pass, whether you want to call it a voucher program or education savings accounts, as some of the Republicans prefer, but a program that would redirect some of the public money toward parents who want to choose homeschooling or private school. And that has, a version of that has passed the Iowa Senate, but right now it doesn't have enough support in the Iowa House. So they're moving separate pieces of the education bill, some things, you know, small things like allowing parents to hold their kids back for a year based on lost learning during the pandemic, open enrollment to make it difficult for, there are a few metro area school districts that have voluntary diversity plans that limit open enrollment, and this would outlaw that. So there are different pieces of education bills that are still going, but the big thing on the governor's wish list is this voucher program. And I am, you know, I've been cautioning people in the education field not to celebrate too early, because what we see often in the Iowa legislature is that a bill might stall for weeks or months, but then a day or two before they adjourn for the year, all of a sudden they manage to get 51 or 52 votes for it in the House. So I don't think this is at all a done deal.
There's also a bill that's still alive that would ban tenure at state universities.
Yes. I mean, I think that it's not as likely that that will become law. I think that the Republicans were intending to send a message to state universities, and I think that that message has probably been received. And I think that what, unfortunately, a lot of current faculty are probably looking for work in other states, and there are probably people in the job market that are going to be looking more seriously at other offers, not in Iowa. So I think that that's an example of a bill where it's just damaging to even have that dangling out there. And not just the Board of Regents has been lobbying against that, and the education groups have been very against that, because they know that Iowa State depends on those tenured faculty to land the research grants that really benefit people in the agriculture sector. So it's again, it's interesting to look at the lobbying declarations on that tenure ban bill, because it includes the people against it include people like the Iowa Soybean Association and the Iowa Cattlemen's Association and groups that don't normally weigh in on education legislation.
Another series of bills still alive, surviving the funnel, ones that would impact gun rights in Iowa.
This was particularly interesting for me, because when the constitutional amendment that would say, it would introduce Second Amendment style language to the Iowa Constitution, it would say also that any restrictions on the right to keep and bear arms must be subject to strict scrutiny. A lot of Democrats were warning during the House and Senate debates that this could threaten laws currently on the books, like background checks and permits to carry concealed weapons. And during the House and Senate debates, the Republican floor manager said that that wasn't their intention, that they didn't think that this would threaten the current bill, but what with the current legal environment for regulating guns. But now we see bills moving that would actually repeal any requirement to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon. And that would have the effect of basically repealing the background checks. I mean, there would still be federally required background checks for some licensed gun dealers, but if you bought a gun privately through private sale or at a gun show, you wouldn't have to go through any background check for that, and you wouldn't need a permit to carry it. It's usually the permitting process is where people go through the background check. So that is something that is going to be highly controversial, and I'll be interested to see how far that goes. But it kind of contradicted what we heard from some of the legislators when that constitutional amendment was being debated.
Speaking of guns and controversy, let's segue into police. There are a couple of bills that are still alive after the funnel involving police, but one part of it is not, and both of these are highly controversial and obviously generating some heat. Let's talk about the bills that are still alive involving police.
Yes, you know, a few days ago, the Betty Andrews, who's the president of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP, and I know she's an occasional guest on KHOI, she told the Des Moines Register that she felt that this legislative session has been a setback for race relations in Iowa. And I would have to concur, because last summer, the legislature got together and unanimously approved a policing reform bill. I mean, it wasn't a huge step, but it was a small step in the right direction. And they promised to come back and work more on policing reform this year. And instead, what happened was the governor introduced a bill that combined a racial profiling ban with a bunch of measures that she characterized as back the blue, which really some people said was more about discouraging or outlawing certain types of protest and making it easier for police to detain people who were protesting. So what Republicans have done is they didn't advance any the portion that would have banned racial profiling, but they've been advancing other portions, bills that carry other portions of this package. So increasing the penalties for different kinds of protests. And one thing that's really concerning for people is a bill that would allow police to see, like if somebody filed a complaint against them, they would be able to find out that the name of who filed the complaint. And that's raised some concern because there are in some police departments, I mean, there are certain officers who tend to attract more complaints than others. And you really don't want to open the door to retaliation. I mean, you want citizens to feel safe in filing a complaint and feeling that that complaint is going to be investigated without opening them up to retaliation. So that's one that has been raising a lot of concerns. But some of the enhanced penalties for protests, I mean, there are questions about whether those are even constitutional. But it is interesting to see that what started out as a bill that was supposedly going to balance two sides just ended up being completely weighted toward the police perspective, and not all of the police groups even support all of these bills.
Right. Well, that's going to be interesting to watch. Again, the governor has asked for that ban on racial profiling, but she's not going to get it.
Yeah, and she didn't really put, you know, sometimes the governor mentions something in her condition of the state speech and then really works on it. And sometimes she doesn't. So I would say in 2019, when she was working on the felon voting, changing the constitution to change the current the language that bans felon voting, she really did have her staff lobby legislators to try to get that passed. But this racial profiling, I would say that is more of something that she mentioned in the speech, but really I don't think my sense is that her staff haven't been really down there pounding the pavement trying to get that passed compared to, let's say, the judicial selection changes of a couple of years ago, which the governor's staff were highly motivated and made sure, you know, they just kept at it and kept at it until they got the 51 votes they needed in the Iowa House.
We have a couple of minutes left. Let's talk about censorship. There's still some bills alive after the funnel, one that would ban state and local governments from having contracts with or offering aid to certain companies that censor online content. Another would fine social media companies that censor constitutionally protected speech. This is a longstanding argument among Republicans nationally that Facebook and Twitter are just unfair to them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of funny because if you look at the top performing Facebook posts in any given week, like of the top 10 posts, most of them are actually conservative oriented posts. So it's not accurate to say that Facebook is suppressing conservative views at all. I mean, Twitter has been taking down posts that spread lies about the 2020 election, and YouTube has done that as well. But there really isn't a widespread censorship problem. And I think that there are some questions about the way some of those bills have been worded. That the idea that, you know, you couldn't have a contract. I mean, somebody, the Board of Regents representative noted the subcommittee that, you know, what would that mean? Like if Microsoft were found to have done something that violated somebody's speech rights, is the entire University of Iowa going to have to stop using Microsoft products on thousands of computers? You know, it's just not really practical. And it didn't seem like it was a very well thought out bill. And the Senator Jake Chapman, who was the guy who spearheaded that bill, he was tweeting about it and tagging Donald Trump Jr. in his tweet. So it seemed like it was more of an attention-seeking exercise than serious attempt at legislating. So we'll see what happens. I think that one, if it passes, is probably going to be pretty significantly amended.
30 seconds, Laura. What do you expect the legislature to tackle this week?
Oh, I mean, there's just a lot on the agenda. I do think that sooner rather than later, now that the funnel's passed, they will get to that abortion bill in the Senate. And I think that in the House, we'll just see what kind of education voucher bill that they can work on. I think that the discussions are still ongoing on that.
And you will be watching and blogging on your Bleeding Heart website and Heartland website, not Bleeding Heart. I'm Dennis Hart. Laura, thank you for joining me again tonight.
Thank you. Always fun to be here.
We are out of time. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. Laura Bellin and I will be right back here next Monday night live at 7 o'clock with a look at what makes news in the Iowa State Legislature this week and, yes, what it means for all of us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it, and good night.